Yes, but I had understanding of medical knowledge to do that. To contain a clinic, when you go on disaster missions, you need to understand, okay? Well, I can't take a trauma team for primary health care. It's a disaster, it's not going to work. And you can't take a primary health team for earthquakes. Mm. You need orthopedics, trauma specialists, anesthetists. So you need to understand the
type of... Now tell us, I've always wanted to ask you about this question. I mean, your organization was lauded for the response, the speed, and the level of activity, and I think the variety of healthcare professionals that you brought together within a very short space of time during the Haiti earthquake. Now, how did this happen? How did you hear about it? How did you get there? How did you get all the people involved? And how did you land in what was a very, very tricky geographical environment?
My advantage is I have 18 years of experience in disaster response.
Is it 18 years already?
It's 20 years. 18 years for Gift of the Givers and 2 years before that.
I see.
And you know, and the difference is I myself go for every mission. I don't send other people. When I say I don't send other people, I'm in charge. Except Haiti was the difference. Mm. And I'll come to that. Okay. When I was in Egypt, I just got back to South Africa. It was the 13th of January in the morning, you know, Wednesday morning. I got a call from a friend of mine who even gave me a call during the time of the tsunami, 10 past 6 in the morning. Mm. He said, my friend, Foreign Affairs is looking for you. They don't know if you're in the country or out of the country. I said, I just got back. He said, did you see there's a massive earthquake in Haiti? Now, Victor, with me, I can look at pictures in 30 seconds and I can tell you if it's big or small or how massive it is because of so much of earthquakes that I've seen. Mm. I said, okay, wait for me a couple of seconds. I put the TV on. It didn't even take me 5 seconds. I said, man, this thing is huge. You know, it probably 30 or 40,000 people are dead already. Mm. You know, I made the announcement. I said, that was at 10 past 6, at half past 6, I made the announcement that we're going in. At half past
Just
7.
Just like that?
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. At half past 7, the search and rescue team was ready. At half past 8, the medical teams were ready.
But these people are not permanent with the organization.
No.
I mean, these are all volunteers.
These are all volunteers. And you'd be surprised the amount of people. That's why the people ask me, do you have a list? I said, yes, I do have a list. But it's not limited to the list only. Because, for example, Victor tells me in January, I'm ready to go with you. But in the disaster hit in March. But 28 February, Victor just took his holiday from hospital. He can't go anymore. Mm. So Victor says, okay, John can now go. Mm. So like that, we have a list, but we open it to the public. And within seconds, the names come in.
Okay.
And then.
So what happened on this particular day then?
We had, from our own list, people were ready to go. And also, people called in, they said, we're ready to go. I said, the biggest complication is, how do we get to Haiti? Mm. There's two options. Either through Europe or through America.
But hang on, have you got aircraft? Do you own aircraft?
At that stage, we decided the best thing was to take commercial airliners. Mm. And the direct flights via America, you know, into Haiti. Or we can take, but when the first 2 days when the earthquake happened, I spoke to Air France. I said, you know what? We need to get there. I said, but there's one condition. That airport may close. I know the earthquake. If everything is unstable, the airport will close. Mm. They said, no. The airport is open. It's fine. We'll get in. I said, give it to me in writing. I guarantee that you will get them in if that airport is closed. They got into the flight. They got to Paris. And Air France says the airport is closed. Mm-hmm. They said, we have to turn you back. I took out the email. I said, remember what you wrote here?
Yeah.
You can't turn them back. So they said, what do we do? I said, I'm not unreasonable. Mm. You reroute them to Dominican Republic.
I see.
I had already prepared ground arrangements in Dominican Republic. That's the reason I didn't go on this mission. Because there was no communication from Haiti, and all my teams would have got stuck. So by SMS, I controlled all the teams that went, and instead of sending them, I was happy that the airport closed in Haiti. Because if the first team would have got in, the second team would have been stuck.
Oh, so you decided to stay behind so that you could coordinate the process.
Yes.
Because once inside the aircraft, you would not have been able to do all the communication.
And also even in Haiti, because all the networks are down. Normally, I can do that whilst I'm in the other country. But in this case, I knew I was not going to be able to do it because Haiti is too small. And all the networks are wiped out. So there's no way I could tell my people who to bring, what to bring, what to do.
Lessons learned from the Haiti process?
The lessons learned is the same in every other one, you know. Mm. No matter what you do to prevent an earthquake, you can never adequately or fast enough move people. What you need to do, and what we've always done, is your speed of response time. Your speed of response is absolutely essential. And from Haiti and from the other earthquakes, what I want to do is to have my own field hospital. But when I say field hospital, I don't mean field hospital. And I'll explain that. When I got there, people said we got class field hospitals. And when you go there, you realize how impractical this thing is. It weighs so many tons. It requires big equipment to move it. It's got all this expensive stuff that requires massive electricity. I said, my friend, if you've got no cranes, no aircraft to land, and you need to move the stuff somewhere else, how are you going to do this? I said, what we need is lightweight theater tables, ordinary tents where you can make the flaps join together. So one tent is theater, next tent is recovery room, third tent is post-op and they go out, and anesthetic section, and then bigger tents to do that, a small table, and search and rescue equipment, lightweight. You know, because other countries come on the aircraft, because South Africa cannot afford to send expensive planes, but you know, on all missions. It's very expensive.
Hold it there. When you come back from the break, you must now tell us that, have you got any plans for succession? Who's going to succeed you? Because clearly, the success of organization has been really mainly because you've been at the helm. But I'm sure it is such that with the passage of time, you'll also have to rest at some point and pass on the baton to other people. Remember to continue our discussion on our website, as we have a resident doctor who can attend to all your queries and continue our discussion with Imtiaz Suleiman, chairperson of the Gift of the Givers Foundation, after the break. Welcome back. My name is Horsatswara Pelakahlo Saletsatsi Mona Bonitas House Call who SABC 2. Then I know Lukisitsa Ngakakatlung. And today we're having a one-on-one discussion with chairperson of the Gift of the Givers Foundation, Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman. Now, you have Zora, your wife, and five children based in Maritzburg. How are they coping with your travels around the world?
They've got used to it over the time. You know, they've realized, because from the religion, it tells you need to get involved in serving mankind. And they have understood that this is what life is and religion is all about.
And they're very supportive.
Fully, completely, 100%.
Talking about succession now, how did the organization run, and what are the plans when you decide to retire at some point?
I've been thinking of that all the time for many years. You know, and because this is like a spiritual instruction, you need to find people who are spiritually elevated to be, I'm not saying that I'm spiritually elevated, but to find people who can understand this kind of inspiration. Initially, when I started off doing this project myself. I did the faxing myself, put up pictures on the wall myself, did everything myself, and it was very do-it-myself kind of stuff. Eventually I realized you have to trust people. You have to bring other people in. And then I opened this. I only had one office in 1994 in Maritzburg. Only years later, in 2006, several years later, I decided to open a second office in Johannesburg. And I said, okay, let me put a manager, somebody I can trust. And then office in Durban in 2008, and an office in Cape Town in 2009, an office in Malawi in 2006. And I said, okay, I'm going to put the protocols down. Serve people unconditionally, value, do things in modesty, in a very balanced, accountable way, do everything. And I laid out all the protocols. And I said, now you guys got leeway. Your only job is to deliver to people in the best way possible, and I leave you free. Victor, they drove me crazy. They came up with projects, they came up with ideas. I left them free because they knew I trusted them. They started designing their own things, you know, and they came up with fantastic ideas. And because of that, we expanded so rapidly in the last 2 to 3 years. So in terms of management of most of the projects, all these managers can run it. The problem is with the international disaster response. I've taken doctors with me. I've got other doctors who work with me. And I've, you know, some of them are on repeat missions. They're now learning the ropes, how to do stuff. And that's why on the Haiti mission, I could send people without me going with.
I see.
I now need to show somebody how to coordinate the disasters and all the other projects together and the expanding portfolio.
So you have a board of trustees that helps manage and govern the organization?
Well, there are a board of trustees who just, you know, see what's going on. Mm. But the bottom line is, because this thing comes by inspiration, we are shown what to do. And you decide, okay, this is going to be done, this is going to be done, you know. And because everything is related to service orientation, you never have any, there's nothing negative about what we do.
Mm. Now, who's your main sponsor? Will it be a company X or was it
individual? There is no
X?
Main sponsor. Mm. It's companies have a choice. Yeah. They have a preference. You know, they would say, okay, in this disaster, we would like to respond. The other problem that we had, you know, let's talk about this openly. I've talked about it many times. Because people say this is a Muslim organization. Mm. Is it for Muslims only?
I see.
And yet 99% of our aid in this country is predominantly for people who are not Muslim. And international disasters, unfortunately, most of them were in Muslim countries. Mm. You know, if you look at Pakistan earthquake, first one, and now the floods, the crisis in Iraq, the problem in Afghanistan. But of course, there was Niger, which is not a Muslim country. Rwanda, we helped in Lesotho where there was hunger. In Swaziland we've helped. Then we've helped in other parts of the world, the DRC, the volcanic eruption, India, which is a Hindu country, in Sri Lanka, the tsunami. So we've helped in Malawi, we've got offices, it's not a Muslim country. But people still don't understand that. When the Haiti thing broke out, they realized that this was a Catholic country. And there are people from other denominations there. And the strange thing, the media and the public were now saying that the Muslim organization responded to a Christian country faster and more efficiently than they've responded to a Muslim country. And that broke all the barriers. Companies, ordinary people, churches, everybody came to us. And from that day onwards, no matter what project we talk about, even like for Pakistan, which is a Muslim country, people say, no, we want to support you because we know you are purely humanitarian and you don't look at color, you don't look at religion, you only look at need. And in that way, the support has come across sector. When I say we get support from government. Government gives me the diplomatic support. But remember in 2003, they gave me that 60 million rand to roll out the food parcel program. But at times, the government will say, okay, we will now pay for one flight, but you must fill the flight. And sometimes I would say, okay, I will pay for the flight and I will fill it and I will take you with me. So we have a partnership relationship. So that's where government comes in. But there are a few corporate companies, not many, but not big amounts, but it's slowly coming.
And in kind as well.
Oh, in kind. Man, they've made me put warehouse after warehouse after warehouse. I know I cannot talk about the companies in terms of advertising here,
sure.
But there are companies who have been really supporting us in a big way. And there's one company that stands out. In the last 3 months, they funded, like they told me, when they saw one program on TV, they called me, they said, you know what? They called, my manager from Maritzburg. They said, we're very happy with what we're doing. We want to give you some stuff. Come collect 30 pallets or 25 pallets. We thought for the year, this is our contribution. They call him a week later. They say, take 30 pallets. They call him a week later, and for the next 3 weeks, they gave him a bucket load of soup or food items. Then they called him a few weeks ago and said, 8 tons of supplies. And then they said, we heard you got an office in Johannesburg. They said, yes. They called the Joburg office, 2 trucks loads. They called us yesterday, come collect 200 pallets of items. And then they said, we heard you got an office in Cape Town, and they started in Cape Town. And these are expensive products. In kind, it's run into millions already. Then you have people giving us new shoes, new clothes. Victor, it runs in the millions.
As they say, if God be for us, who can be against us? But now, the World Cup, 2010 yes. FIFA World Cup, what impact did that have in the organization and what contribution did you make, if any, during an event that is clearly a historical event, both for the continent and South Africa?
I think the most poignant part of this event was the relationship building between races. Yeah. Although I specialize in disasters and the other projects, I always say that's my secondary work. They say, what's your first work? My first work is what my teacher taught me in Istanbul when I saw black, white, Hindu, Christian, Muslim and Jew all get together. Because of so much ethnic strife all over the world, I like to see relationship building between people. And there's no better relationship building than sports and culture that brings people together. There's no politics, there's no barriers, there's no rules. And we said, okay, sports is related to health. You know, kids across color play together. So for the World Cup, we prepared months in advance. We made 500 soccer balls branded in our name, and we made 200 full soccer kits. And we said, we will find poor schools, and we announced it over the radios, write to us, but motivate to us why you should get the soccer kit. And we went throughout the country. Besides giving the kits out, we went and we found, and we made matches. We made people play against each other and say, soccer is good for development. We do volleyball also, we do other stuff, but soccer has been the biggest thing for us. And we said, let's get children excited. Soccer is a big sport, and we need to reintroduce this into schools and to build a new Bafana team in the future from the very small level and to go up also the leagues. And in the process, one night before the finals on Sunday, on a Thursday night, I was at Carrie's Fountain. They were having a meeting of all the legends, you know, and they were bringing all the old soccer players from the old leagues together. And whilst I was there, I met a German couple. When I say couple, I mean they were about 28, 29 years old. And we just met by chance and we took a liking to each other. And they said, look, we're involved very closely with the German national team. We're involved with Angela Merkel. Our group is called Global. And we have another organization called Children Are Our Number One. We do consulting through Global, which is our sports arm, and Children Are Our Number One, which is our charity arm. I said, what do you guys do? They say, we specialize in training goalkeepers. And they said, if you look at Africa's problem, most of the cases, the goalkeepers don't have the kind of coaching that the European teams get. And our academy, their academy, is one of the most recognized.